You've heard it said before, behind every great man, there's a great woman. And normally when we think of that phrase, what are we thinking about? We're thinking of the spouse, the wife who's supporting her husband. But today I want to spin it a different way. I want you to think of the children that a mother raises, or rears rather. She stands behind the great men and women of our day. And each new generation has much to look back and thank moms for. Mothers make the men and the women who shape the next generation. That was certainly the case with Samuel. Before kings came into being in the nation of Israel, Israel depended on judges and prophets to be their leaders. In fact, we have a whole book in the Old Testament called Judges. Right after Judges comes the book of Ruth, and then right after Ruth comes the book of 1 Samuel. Samuel is somewhat of a transition guy because he's both a judge and a prophet. He's the last of Israel's great judges. He is a prophet, and Israel would have more of those, but he's kind of the bridge between the judges of the past and the kings that were going to come under his leadership. A great leader. But why was he such a great leader? Why did he have such great success? Well, I think it has a lot to do with what we find true about his mom, Hannah. Would you look with me at 1 Samuel chapter 1, and I'm looking at verse number 9. Listen, or follow along as I read. 1 Samuel 1, verses 9 to 20. So Hannah rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh, and after they had drunk. Now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by a post of the temple of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul, and prayed unto the Lord, and wept sore. And she vowed a vow, and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid, and remember me, and not forget thine handmaid, but wilt give unto thine handmaid a man child, then I will give unto him, or rather I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head. And it came to pass, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli marked her mouth. Now Hannah, she spake in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she had been drunken. And Eli said unto her, How long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. And Hannah answered and said, No, my lord, I'm a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial, or a daughter of wickedness. For out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. Then Eli answered and said, Go in peace. And the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him. And she said, Let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight. So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. And they rose up in the morning early and worshipped before the Lord, and returned and came to the house to Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. Wherefore it came to pass, when the time was come, about after Hannah had conceived, that she bare a son and called his name Samuel, saying, Because I have asked him of the Lord. Of all the women in Scripture, with the exception of maybe the Virgin Mary who gave birth to the Christ child, I think of Hannah as a godly woman. And because of her godly influence, though very brief and short in Samuel's life, he turns out to be a very godly young man. So how did she do it? How can we do it as moms today to influence the next generation in a way that they go on to be strong men and women for the Lord? The emphasis of the message is this: if you want children who are going to be pleasing in God's eyes, then they must see God in your life in every possible way. And I want you to think of three traits that are true about Hannah today that should be true about every godly mom who wants to leave a godly legacy on her kids. I think that really is the strongest, kids. Even if a kid went on to be a president of a corporation or the president of the country, if the child failed to live for God, then that child isn't a successful child. So regardless of what our children end up vocationally as, the most important thing is that they they end up pleasing in God's eyes. So how can we raise kids that way? I think we get some clues from the life of Hannah. Now, Hannah's certainly not a perfect example, but there's many things to commend about her life. I want you to notice three of them with me today, and the first one is this. I want you to see her dependence upon God. Dependence on others is largely ridiculed in our society. It's looked at as a weakness, but not with God. He is most able and willing to help those who say that they need help, not those who can do it on their own. And godly moms know that they need God's help. Now, I want you to see this in the life of Hannah. We're going to start with verse number 10. I want you to see that she's dependent on God, and we see it in her prayer life. Verse number 10, and she was in bitterness of soul and prayed unto the Lord and wept sore. The rest of this chapter explains why Hannah would have been so passionate and so desperate in her prayers. She was struggling with an affliction that was a great misfortune in her day. According to verse number 5, the Lord had shut up her womb, the end of verse 5. It says it again in verse 6, because the Lord had shut up her womb. She couldn't bear a child. Now, this wasn't merely a matter of disappointment or regrettable situation that couldn't be corrected. It was a humiliating curse or stigma upon a woman in her day, in which a woman's highest honor was connected with having a child. Hannah was unable to do so. So she not only went around with the disappointment of herself of not being able to bear a child, but really with the stigma of culture of not being able to give her husband what was expected of her. On top of that, we see in verse number 6 that she had an adversary in her own home. She was provoked sore and to make her fret. And that was the second wife that Elkanah had taken. Her name was Peninnah. And she had children, and Hannah didn't. A daily reminder of her failure. How distressing. I want to take just a moment. I'm actually going to say more about this tonight, and I want to invite you back. But I'm going to talk just for a moment about polygamy. We see it in the text here. Elkanah had two wives, Hannah and Peninnah. I want to say this a bit. The Bible never endorses polygamy, though it does say it did take place. And it did take place in Near Eastern cultures, not just with Israel, from time to time. It wasn't prevalent, but it did take place. And normally it was because the first wife was unable to produce an heir for the family. A second wife would be taken. We see this all the way back with the first patriarch of the nation of the Jews, with Abraham. His first wife was unable to bear children, and even though God promised an heir through Sarah, he took it in his own hands to marry Hagar, the handmaiden, in order to raise up seed in his name. And this appears to be the case with Elkanah here. He's a godly man. He's going to the temple, or the tabernacle at this time in Shiloh. He's trying to follow the Lord, but he has no heir. This is not a minor issue. No children, no one to pass on the family legacy and fortune and colors and arms and banner and all that stuff. So he needs to have a son. And wants to have a son, so he marries a second time. This seems to be the case here, though the text doesn't say that. We're assuming why Elkanah married a second, but it seems a pretty safe assumption. Many, when faced with odds that are stacked against them, like Hannah was, end up getting bitter and sore against the Lord. Your situation may not be infertility, but you might have another issue. And isn't it easy when things aren't going the way we expect or the way we ask God to work it out? We get bitter and sore against the Lord. And I am so thankful for the example of Hannah here, because she did not respond that way. Instead, she did what every Christian ought to do when the odds are stacked against us. She went to the Lord in prayer. We see this in Psalm 109 and verse number 4. The verse is on the screen. For my love, they are my adversaries. We already saw the word adversary in verse 6. Hannah felt very much like that second wife was her adversary. But what does Psalm 109 verse 4 say? But I give myself unto prayer. If God had closed her womb, who was the only one who could open it? Yeah, God. Barrenness, of course, isn't uncommon in Scripture. We see it with Sarah. Abraham's wife was barren. Rebekah, Isaac's wife, was barren. Isaac had to pray that Rebekah would conceive, and she did once and had twins, Esau and Jacob. Hannah excels these examples of the past, though, because she took her burden to the Lord and left it there. Now notice how intense her prayers were. We have several examples of this throughout the first chapter. We'll just take them in order here. Verse number 10, we just read a minute ago, she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord. Verse 12, she continued praying before the Lord. Verse 13, she spake in her heart and only her lips moved. 15, I've poured out my soul before the Lord. I like verse 15. It reminds me of Psalm 62, verse 8 that says, trust in the Lord at all times, ye people. Pour out your heart before Him. He is a refuge for us. And God is a refuge for us. We ought to pour out our soul before her. So Hannah is desperate in prayer. Somehow, when I look at chapter 1, I get the idea that this probably is not the first time that Hannah prayed. She's been coming up yearly, we haven't read those verses, but earlier in the chapter she's been coming up with her husband to the tabernacle in Shiloh year by year. My guess is that last year she prayed that way too. And the year before that, she was praying too for a son. And how about the year before that? And some of you know what I'm talking about because you've been praying about something for a year. And the year before that, you were praying for it. And the year before that, you were praying. And it still hasn't changed. But she's still doing what she ought to do. And you're still doing what you ought to do as a Christian if you're praying. And she's pouring out her heart to the Lord, and she's asking for His assistance. She has no one else who can fix her situation. Her husband can't do it. What did Rachel say one time to Jacob? Give me children or I die. Jacob had no power over that. And Elkanah had no power to give her children, but God could. So she kept her burden, bringing her burden to the Lord. Now I've been asked before, is that really right? I mean, didn't God hear us the first time? Isn't it kind of nagging? Just to kind of, God this, God this, God this, God this. Should we just quit after the first time? Isn't that the polite thing to do? Ask God once and leave it alone. What do you think about that? Some of you are smiling. What's the right answer to that? Biblically, we should go in our minds to a parable that Jesus taught in Luke chapter 18 about this unjust judge and this widow who needed some help from the judge. You remember this? This is Luke chapter 18, verse number 1, down through verse number 8. She kept going. And after a while, finally the judge relented. Okay, not because I like this woman, but because she wearies me with her coming, I will grant her request. Now, Jesus tied that to something that God does. And shall not God avenge His own elect? Who's His elect? Those are His children. People who by faith have received Christ, which cry day and night unto Him, though He bear long with them. The implication is sometimes God will let us drag out a little while. He doesn't always... He's not like McDonald's. Make your order and 30 seconds later pull around to the first window for payment and pick it up. It doesn't happen that way. It suggests here in the text that we might have to weary God a little bit. Not because He's reluctant. Boy, we're starting getting off the message. But because He's building into us a whole lot more than we think He is while we wait on Him to provide for our needs. I like Hannah. She stays with it. She remains persistent in prayer. And by that, just showing that she's really dependent on God to fix her situation, not on herself. Jerry Bridges, I've quoted this before. I think it's one of the finest quotes that I've gotten in any book. In fact, my wife, I have to thank her today. She's the one that gave me, this is her first gift to me, if I recall correctly. I didn't even pull it off my shelf to check. She bought me the book, Trust in God, by Jerry Bridges. How many of you read Trust in God by Jerry Bridges? Great book. Put your hands down. I think it was one of the first birthday gifts or something that you gave me. And in that book, Jerry Bridges writes, he says, prayer is the most tangible expression of trust in God or dependence upon God. And that is true. When you're praying, you're really demonstrating, I'm believing you're the only one who can help. When we worry and fret, we're still kind of depending on ourselves to figure it out and get it done. When we're praying, we're depending. Now, let's pause for a moment. Mom, are you a praying mom? I'm not criticizing today. I'm just encouraging. Are you a praying mom? Roberta Hestenese writes, how does prayer fit into the daily life of the woman who has three children and can be alone only if she locks herself in the bathroom? I think some moms can appreciate that. Moms with young children have to be creative when making time for prayer. And I'm not just saying moms with young kids. I mean, any point in motherhood involves a little bit of creativity. It might just mean getting a few moments of prayer before your eyes fall dim from tiredness and you go to sleep. It might mean locking yourself in the bathroom from time to time just to get a few moments of quietness so you can talk to God. But somehow, women, mothers who are dependent on God will find a way to work it into life because it has to happen. I need God's help. And a godly mother says, I can't do it by myself. I might have a few mothering skills. I might have read a few books. But in the end, it's not really what I know. It's God's help and His grace that's going to make the difference. I need to get His help. There is nothing then more important that you could do for your kids than pray for them. Your prayers grow everywhere that child does. I could give you a couple examples. I'm going to tell you about R.A. Torrey. Do you know R.A. Torrey? He's the guy who succeeded D.L. Moody to the Pacific Garden Mission and kind of took over D.L. Moody's ministry at the end of the 1800s when D.L. Moody died. He died in, was it 1899, I believe? So in the early 1900s, R.A. Torrey is leading the great YMCA, Pacific Garden Mission, the Moody College in Chicago. Now this, let's back up years. Now you know who R.A. Torrey is. But when he was in college, he was really fighting the Lord. And he'd gotten to a real crisis in his life. He'd gotten pretty low. In fact, he'd become so despondent and so desperate, he contemplated committing suicide. And even had reached for a razor to go ahead and precipitate his plan when God intervened in his life and drove him to his knees. And he cried out in a prayer like this. He said, God, if you will take away this awful burden, I will preach. He'd felt for some time that God wanted him to be a preacher, and he was wrestling with that. Well, God lifted the burden. Peace came to his heart. Slept like a baby that night. Woke up the next day convinced that his life was now in the Lord's hands. Torrey later, telling the testimony to others, said, what brought the change? He said, my mother, 427 miles away, was praying and praying that I would become a minister of the gospel. And though I had gotten over sermons and arguments and churches and everything else, I could not get over my mother's prayers. I like that. Mom's prayers do matter. There's that little proverbial cliche about mother's prayers going with us. And that's true. It worked in R.A. Torrey's case. There's another story from Hudson Taylor's life I could share, but I'm not going to take time. His mother's prayers followed him 50 miles away. Mother's prayers make a difference. They go wherever the child does. So I want to say before any great man becomes a great man, he has a great mom, a mom who prays and demonstrates through her prayers that she's dependent upon God. Now notice what happens as a result of Hannah's praying. I want you to see Samuel later in life. He learned to pray. And when we read the rest of the book of 1 Samuel, we see Samuel, he's always going to prayer. Where did he learn that? I will pray for you unto the Lord. 7:5. 8:6, Samuel prayed unto the Lord. 12:23, God forbid that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you. 15:11, and it grieved Samuel, and he cried unto the Lord all that night. Samuel was a praying prophet, often praying for the people. In fact, I mean, probably only second to Moses in the Old Testament as far as prophets. In fact, Jeremiah 31, verse 15 suggests that when Jeremiah writes that even if Moses or Samuel were here, they could not deliver you, could not spare you. Remember Moses? He was always praying for the people, begging God, don't incinerate them, don't get after them, give them another try, all right? Don't destroy them, think about your reputation, God. He's always pleading for the people and praying for them. And Samuel learned to pray while on his mother's knee. And thank God for praying moms. There's another thing that indicates that Hannah was dependent on the Lord, not only in her prayer life, but in her praise. Because after God does give her a son, she immediately gives credit to the Lord. This is verse 27. I don't think it's on the screen. I have to look at the text. 1 Samuel 1, verse 27, "For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I asked of him." This is Hannah speaking these words to Eli in praise later when God had given her a son. You know how it is, we all beg God for something, and then suddenly, out of the blue, He gives it to us. Do you take time to praise God for that, or do you forget about it? The proof that we're dependent upon God is that we take time to give Him the credit He deserves when He comes through with the answer. Hannah did that, and by her praise is demonstrating she had been dependent upon God the whole time. So when we fail to give credit to God, we demonstrate in the long run that we were really trusting ourselves. If you want children to grow up pleasing in God's eyes, let them see God in your lives. I want you to consider a second trait about Hannah. She was dependent upon the Lord. She was also devoted. I want you to see her devotion to the Lord. By devotion, I'm referring to her genuine loyalty, the sincerity of her heart to love the Lord above all other things, and we see it in several ways. Look with me at verse number 11. "And she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid and remember me and not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid." How many times have you read the word handmaid yet? See it? It's three times in this word, in this verse. The word handmaid means slave or servant girl, and suggests that she's taking a small place, a lowly position. She isn't boasting. She isn't demanding. She's getting low before the Lord. Her only leverage with God was simply her humble heart. That's the only leverage any of us have. James chapter 4, verse number 6 says, "God gives more grace, wherefore he saith, God resists the proud, and he gives grace to the humble." I wonder, Mom, what does your family see at home? Do they see the appearance of a humble heart or a domestic dictator? What your children see makes a huge difference in the kind of people they will one day be. Devotion to God begins with humility. I want you to notice, secondly, in verse number 11, her vow. She vowed a vow. Wow, that's pretty serious. When people make vows, that's pretty serious commitment. In fact, Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 5 and 6 warns, "Don't make a vow to the Lord and not repay it, or you're going to get in trouble with the Lord." Pardon my paraphrase there. I didn't quote it exactly. A vow is a serious thing. She wasn't going to take a vow. You don't take a vow lightly unless you're devoted to the Lord. Her vow demonstrates the seriousness of her commitment to the Lord. Now let me make a segue into a common area to think about when we think about vows, is to think of our marriage vows. That's a serious commitment. But today it's being treated with less and less responsibility and less regard. And that's unfortunate. Hannah made a vow to give her son back to God. When we stand at the altar, we give our vows, we pledge for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer. What we really mean is until something better comes along. I hope not. That certainly is the attitude of some when they stand at the marriage altar. I think that's unfortunate. I often tell people that I'm counseling, if they give me the opportunity to counsel about their marriage, that right now, it's not just about your marriage, it's about the people that your marriage will affect if it breaks apart. And children are often the greatest victims of the marriage. It's not the wife, it's not the husband, it's the children who suffer most. You think of it this way. If they look at their parents' marriage falling apart, and they pray, and God does not fix their broken parents' marriage, how inclined are you going to think that they're going to go to God when something gets broken in their life and ask God to fix it later? God couldn't fix my parents' marriage. Some of you have been through tragic marriage, difficulty of a breakup, and that is not fun. And thankfully, God's grace meets us there and forgives us and restores, and we can move on. But wherever your lot is presently, make that marriage work. Work it out. work to make it sustain. Whether you have kids at home or not, it's a wonderful testimony that your God is big enough to help you through your marriage problems. And every marriage has problems. No marriage is problem exempt. No marriage is a trip to Cancun every other weekend, or San Martin as the case might be. There are difficulties. I remember, and I've shared this before, golfing, and I've done that about a handful of times, so don't ask me to do it, all right? It might be embarrassing, but I was golfing with a former pastor just a week, less than a week before I was to be married to my first wife. And I asked him if he had like one last piece of tidbit information or news. Advice. That's right. That's what I'm looking for. Advice to give me before I get married. And he said, Mike, just you're going to have problems in your marriage. Just choose to handle them the way the Lord would want you to, and you will have a fine marriage. Great advice. Great advice. Good marriages are not ones exempt of problems. Good marriages are those who've learned to handle their problems according to the Bible, with God's help, and grow stronger through them. So may God encourage us. Keep our vows. It might be one of the most important things you could do for your kids is just stay married and work out your problems. Of course, marriage is just one set of commitments we make. As a mom, we make all kinds. Do you make your appointments on time? Do you keep your promises to your kids? Those all say something about whether or not you mean business for God. Well, we see Hannah's devotion in her humility. We see it in her vow. We see it also in her surrender. She gives up the thing she loves most in verse 22. 1 Samuel 1, verse 22. But Hannah went not up, for she said unto her husband, I will not go up until the child be weaned. Then I will bring him that he may appear before the Lord and there abide forever. And then verse 28. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord. And he worshipped the Lord there. At age 3 approximately, we don't know, just whenever the child was weaned, according to verse number 22. About 3 seems to be the typical age at that particular time in history. She took her child up and left him with Eli the priest. Now, it was probably about 15 miles from their home. Now, that doesn't sound too far, but travel wasn't as expeditious as it was, as it is today. So she wasn't going to jump in a car and go see her son every other weekend. She was leaving him and going to see him at most once or twice a year at the annual feasts. Verse number 28 says that when she gave him, she lent him to the Lord. We read lent in the King James Version and we think to ourselves, well, kind of like a loan. Here, God, you can have him for a little bit until I want him back. That's the way we take the word lent. But that's not what she meant. The word means a complete relinquishing of her son to the Lord. Hannah was giving back to the Lord the thing she wanted most. A son. Now, why is that important for all of us? It is doubtful that any of us will go any deeper for God than we are willing to give away the thing we love most for God. This is exactly what God asked Abraham to do on Mount Moriah in Genesis chapter 22. Take the thing you want more than any else that I promised you, that son, and offer him on the mount as an offering. And you know what Abraham's faith did? It allowed him to go up and give away the thing he loved most. I'm reviewing that this morning, and I just had a little moment with God. Am I willing to give up the thing I love most for God? That's real devotion. Hannah was willing to do it, completely committed to God. Mom, what is it, the thing in your life? All of us have it, the thing we want most. Maybe it's just a better marriage or better relationship with our kids, or maybe just meaning or purpose in life or something. Whatever it is, the thing you love most, you're willing to let that die? That's devotion. And Hannah was willing to give up, surrender the thing she loved most for the Lord. Will you stand in God's way, or will you give Him the thing you love most? Hannah triumphed, and she left a legacy of godliness to her kids because she was living godliness in her life. And if you want children who please God, they need to see God in your life. 2. So we see Hannah's dependence mainly through her prayers. We see Hannah's devotion in that vow and the keeping of that vow as she surrendered her son to Eli at the temple, the tabernacle, rather. Finally, I want you to see her commitment to the Lord and her godliness in the fact that she found delight in God's will. We live today in a culture that really puts up in the public scene women's rights and equality in the workplace and bragging on women who reach positions that once were only reserved for men. And I'm not against women who are skilled and qualified, but to rise to positions and to be properly rewarded for that, etc. That isn't my point this morning. But I'm just wondering if we're really just fighting a battle of futility, trying to get women to find satisfaction in the workplace, when God really has designed the psyche of a woman to be most satisfied and happy when she has a baby and can raise children. I bet if we went around and asked most of the women, more than anything out of life before you were married, I bet you wanted to be married and you wanted to raise kids. That might not be 100%, but I think the vast majority, I think the reason for that is that God sets up a woman's psyche that way. And there's always something missing from the career woman who pursues what she wants and she doesn't ever have children. Now, sometimes God doesn't allow that to happen, and I'm not trying to go there, but I'm just saying that's the way the natural bent of woman is. She's to find delight in her opportunities to raise a family. And I think women are cheated out who look for that delight in other places. Hannah didn't. Godly mothers don't buck the system. They delight in God's prescription for their happiness. Hannah only had brief contact with her son when she went up year by year, but she learned to delight in God's will and purpose for her life. What a lesson for us. There are things we would all change about our lives and careers if we could. But it is godly to take whatever God deals you in your hand and to take it and make the most of it. Now I want you to see this in Hannah's life. She found delight in God's will by serving her son. This is chapter 2, I believe, now. Yes, we're in chapter 2, verse number 18, 19. We're going to see her going up to the temple year by year. Verse number 18, chapter number 2. But Samuel ministered before the Lord, being a child, girded with a linen ephod. Moreover, his mother made him a little coat. The word here is a long robe or garment worn over the tunic. The tunic is the basic garb of a person, and the robe would be kind of tantamount to a suit for us. I mean, a spiffy outfit. So she's making this little coat and bringing it up to him from year to year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. She's seeing him once a year. But I can see her at home with the needlework, getting that outfit ready for the next year. And each day she takes those needles in hand and runs the thread through them. She is anticipating that reunion with her son and anticipating being able to give him that gift. That's her connection to her kid while he's so far away. Much of mothering is just accepting the arrangement that God has given and making the most of it. Hannah was doing that. She would have loved to have that kid home every day, but she made a promise and she was going to keep it. She made the most of her situation. I want to say to all of us, whether that's just mothering or just life, making the best of less than ideal circumstances is certainly a task of a godly person and something that we should aim for. I wonder, are you critical and complaining of heart because God's not giving you what you asked for or thought you deserved? I think often we miss out on the blessing of God because we're demanding or despondent when God doesn't give us what we want. As a result of Hannah's delightful heart, delighting in what God had given to her at that season in her life, God blessed her in her greater way. Let's look at verses 20 and 21. Eli blessed Elkanah and his wife and said, "The Lord give thee seed of this woman for the loan." Again, the word here doesn't mean that it was a temporary arrangement. She completely relinquished Samuel into the Lord's hands, which is lent to the Lord, and they went unto their own home. And the Lord visited Hannah so that she conceived and bare 3 sons and 2 daughters. And the child Samuel grew before the Lord. God added to her family. gave her delight upon delight. And this is what the Bible teaches in Psalm 37, verse number 4. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and He's going to make your life miserable. Oh, that's not the right verse, is it? Delight thyself also in the Lord, and He shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Now, she had the son, she gave him back, and according to the previous verse in verse 19, she came up year by year and gave him a new coat. So we have to assume that a couple years have gone by. Maybe 3 years from the time she's given Samuel away. God didn't immediately add to her family, but God will be a debtor to no man, or in this case, no woman, and He blessed her and rewarded her for giving that gift back to the Lord and gave her much more than she ever anticipated. Instead of just one son, God gave her three more sons, so a total of four plus two daughters. How good of God to add to us when we delight in Him. Why would we have it any other way? Why would we serve anyone else? I think all of this together, you can see a woman who's depending on the Lord. She's devoted herself to God, delights in His ways. And that can't have helped but rub off on Samuel year by year as they had a little bit of time of fellowship at the yearly sacrifice. And as a result, Samuel grew up to be a godly man. I know my wife and I have talked about this. We look at other families and we see godly young men who've grown up, and remember one conversation in particular we had with a Christian couple, a pastor and his wife, and they have three sons now serving in ministry, and all of them are serving God. Boy, wouldn't you like your kids all to come out like that? So we asked her, or my wife asked her rather, you know, what would you explain, what was the secret behind your success with raising your boys? And honey, you want to give the answer? You know what I'm talking about? Do you remember?
Pray a lot.
Pray a lot. Yeah, pray a lot. Hey, God's good. We delight in Him and seek Him. He will help us where we're weak, make up for our deficiencies, and help us to raise a godly seed. If you want your children pleasing in God's eyes, let them see God in every area of your life. The next generation will be glad you did. I'm going to finish today by reminding you, to make a man, it takes a mom. And Hannah is a godly example, a godly mom who left a legacy and a godly son. There are many examples I could use. I'm going to choose today to pick an example from the autobiography of C.H. Spurgeon. Great preacher from the 1800s. In fact, he pastored the largest church in London in the 1800s, called the Metropolitan Tabernacle. Still there today. How did he become such a godly man? Well, you ask C.H. Spurgeon tells in his autobiography that he owes a lot to his mom. In fact, his own conversion, he realized, was through the instruction of his mother. And through her counsel, he eventually found the Lord. Now, he got saved under a deacon preaching, "Look unto me and be saved all the ends of the earth, for I am God and there is none else." Isaiah 45:22, the text under which C.H. Spurgeon got saved. But it was the prodding and the teaching and the coaching of his mother that made a difference. Later in life, C.H. Spurgeon wrote these words, "You, my mother, have been the great means in God's hand of rendering me what I hope I am. Your kind, warming Sabbath evening addresses were too deeply settled on my heart to be forgotten. You, by God's blessing, prepared the way for the preached word. And I love you as the preacher to my heart, as my praying, watching mother." That's a legacy. That's a legacy of a mom impressing on a young man the need to follow God. And he did. And he made an impact for the Lord. Behind every great man is a great mother who made a difference so that he would become the man or that God wanted him to be. Mom, your efforts are worthwhile. Your legacy can be eternal if you pass along a legacy of love for God. Shall we pray? Father in heaven,